Hey guys, this is Joseph. Just to let you know, this week we are covering some very challenging topics, including mental health, self-harming, and suicidal thoughts. If you or anybody that you know are struggling with these issues, don't forget that you can reach out anytime to the Samaritans at www.samaritans.org.
Welcome to A Cup of Joe, a weekly podcast discussing life and business. Grab a coffee and get comfortable. Here's your host, Joseph Rubelli.
In this week's episode, we're talking about mental health. We'll be hosting Clemmie, founder of the blog Cooking Through Recovery, and she'll be sharing her powerful story of how cooking rescued her from depression. Let's dive in. Hey, so let's get started with this week's topic by introducing a wonderful guest. She's the founder of the blog Cooking Through Recovery. She is joining us from Zimbabwe. Please, guys, welcome Clemmie. Hi, Clemmie. How are you today?
Hey, I'm good. How are you doing?
Very well. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me.
You're welcome.
I am really excited to have you here because I love your blog. Let me just dive in a little bit more how I came across to your actual blog, because it was recommended by a friend of mine. She told me about your stories, and then I went to your page and I really started to really get into it and read every single post that you did and done a little bit of research about you. And this is how we come here today. So for all the people that didn't manage to get to know you just yet, I would like to kind of dive in a little bit into who you are and what got you to where you are today.
Okay, sure. So I guess it would start kind of when it all kicked off. It was around, I started noticing low moods when I was about 10, but didn't really think anything of it. But when I was 14, literally overnight, I woke up miserable and nothing was really ever the same. After that, it was after a school exchange to Canada.
Right.
Which was, it was the most amazing exchange. And then I came back home and everything was different. But it was always kind of steady through school. And then it got worse again when I was in my 20s and addictions all came along as well.
Because your story is quite intense in the way that you have so many chapters, which I would like to really kind of dive in a little bit more to find out. So how did you realize that something was not right? What was the first sign of it, would you say?
I'm not too sure. So like when I was 10, I was just like constantly crying for no reason. And I wasn't sure at all what it was. But that could have just been hormones.
Yeah.
But now I was 14. When I woke up that morning, I don't know what happened. I just woke up in a foul mood. I was angry and I was upset. And that then just continued on for years. Like, it didn't shift. It was horrible. I was so angry, actually. I was so angry. I think I was being made to get up for school by my housemistress. And I'd been promised a lie-in or something. And I just flipped my lid and it all just kicked off.
Over the sudden,
literally, like that? Overnight.
Nuts. And did you talk about this with your family?
Not really. Like, they kind of knew a bit. They thought I had, you know, maybe had problems with hormones or that I was struggling to settle into school and make friends. And they knew I was seeing the school counselor, but they, you know, they didn't pay too much attention to it, which is, you know, it's fine. That's just how our family is. But as things,
they didn't think, they thought it was just a kind of a phase for little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. And I, like, since, you know, I've got better, thank God, and I've had long chats with my mum, she thought it was just, you know, that I had quite a long puberty. And she thought it was either something to do with the hormones in puberty, and because I had a long puberty, that was just my hormones going mad, or, you know, the fact that I was at a new school and struggling to make friends and fit into the right stuff.
She thought it was more of a, I guess it's kind of right, because, you know, when I was a teenager as well, it was just, you get through that point, don't you, where you kind of feel that you hate everyone. It's kind of, you know, it's one of the stages. And so she probably thought it was just a matter of being in the new school, new place, kind of.
Yeah, exactly. You know. So, you know, I can't fault her on that. I can't fault any of my family on that. They've always been supportive. Yeah, but it was difficult. It was hard.
So then you... there is something happening, isn't it? Like going through when you are 20 years old.
Yeah, so I'd been pretty bleak, you know, all through my teens, and it would kind of come up and down. But when I was, when I was on my gap year, I was in quite an abusive relationship, mentally abusive. And my ex made me feel like crap and basically reaffirmed all of the negative self thoughts, like doubts that I had, you know, that no one liked me and everything. He would make sure I knew that. So that didn't help at all. And it also brought me down. And then a few years later, I must have been 22. I was in a different relationship. See a pattern there. And yeah, the depression came back so badly. And I was drinking heavily. I was smoking a lot of pot. And you know, in between all these relationships, I was sleeping with anyone and everyone that I could find, but I was just at a total breaking point.
While you were with your current partner at the time. So were you doing it at the same time?
I never cheated on him.
Okay.
I had a catfish from about 14, who I'd still never met. And, you know, we would message every now and then, sometimes a bit flirty. And the ex did find out about that at one point, which wasn't good. I ended up cutting myself.
So you started to do self-harming?
Yeah, I mean, I'd self-harmed all through my teens, and then I didn't do it for a few years, and then I did it then, because I didn't really know how to express myself. I couldn't explain why I wanted to talk to this guy, but it was that kind of feeling of validation, even though I was in a relationship with someone who adored me, and I adored him, I guess, and... But I still needed that external validation.
Yeah, you kind of needed to have. Yeah, I understand what you mean. It's like everything is fine, everything is going well. You have people around you that love you, but somehow something is missing.
Exactly.
You need the extra confirmation in terms of, you know,
I'm worthy.
Exactly. Loads of people feel that, and it's kind of you feel. There is something more that the people around you cannot feel in that way.
Yeah, and it's really hard to express that as well, and to like verbalize it, put it into words to those around you. Like I couldn't explain why I needed it, and I couldn't explain what it was that I needed. It's only on reflection and therapy and stuff I now know. You know, I can now understand it all more.
And did your partner at the time realize you were self-harming, or did you find out how?
I only self-harmed once, luckily.
Okay.
With cutting myself, that is. And I told him a few days later. But at that point in time, I was so low that literally anything I did was a form of self-harm. So, you know, I was drinking to go to sleep, smoking pot to go to sleep to calm my anxiety. I used to pull my hair out as well in chunks, like rip it out instead, like not just picking one or two. Like, I'd take a chunk and just rip it out when things would get too much, or I got in too much of a fluster, and like a cornered rabbit in a headlights type thing.
Right.
Like, when you're just stuck and you're frozen and you're terrified and you're angry and you're sad and you don't know what's going on. I just
put chunks out.
Yeah. Yeah, and it all got really bad end of 2014. And I was so ready to kill myself. And I had written a will on my phone, like a makeshift will, you know, like all my wants and needs for when the time came. And thankfully, I managed to leave the house one day. My ex didn't actually come with me, but I went over to my sister's. She was having a Christmas party. And I finally told her how bad things were.
Did they have any idea to this point?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So they'd had an idea. They knew that I had depression. Before this, when I was with the abusive ex, my mum got me sessions with like a hypnotherapist type therapist. It was kind of self-hypnosis type thing. Which works to some extent, but like it was only a in the moment thing. So they kind of knew. And then when it came back, they knew, well, they knew that things weren't looking too great. And they were, I think, just hoping that it was going to pass. But when I told my sister, this is what I'm going to do. This is how I'm going to do it. This is what I want all my things and everything to be sorted. This is how I want my funeral to go. This is where you'll find my list of my wants and needs.
What was her reaction?
Yeah, so she was in absolute tears. And it was really hard. Luckily, we were upstairs in her bedroom because I looked like an absolute state. I was at that point where I couldn't get dressed properly or do my makeup, keep any personal hygiene. So she had luckily taken me upstairs and was like, right, come on, putting makeup on you, put your hair up, make you look like a vaguely semi-human person. And so, yeah, I told her, and we just sat in her room crying for a while. And a couple of her close friends were there as well. And then it was like, right, come on, let's get a drink. We are going to go and enjoy this party. That was kind of it, done for the rest of the night. But then in, I think it was either around Christmas or early January, my ex set up an intervention with my family to basically get them to see and hear what was really going on. Because he was having to deal with it the whole time, and I kind of managed to keep everything hidden from them.
So your parents didn't know anything at the time. So your ex-boyfriend started to wanted to kind of meet them and kind of make them aware of the situation, right?
Yeah, it was my whole family. Yeah, it was right. Everyone.
Everyone.
Everyone in one room.
Oh my God, that must have been intense.
Yeah, it was really intense and hard.
So you have this meeting, and then what happened?
Then I go to rehab.
And then you go to rehab. How long do you stay in rehab for?
2 years.
Right. So was it 2 years where you stay there, or you go back and forth?
So it was outpatient, so it was mostly every day, and then I obviously took a break to go to cooking school, and then I was back there again and finished 2017.
The cooking school is the point where we get to now, which is what I would say kind of savior, right? A little bit. Cooking was for you a big part of your recovery. And what was cooking for you at the time? What was the meaning for you?
So I'd always loved cooking, and I always loved food. My mum's an awesome cook, so I've always been around good food, and I've been privileged enough to have been able to eat at lovely restaurants and in lots of different countries. So it always had a big place in my heart, and I'd been cooking in restaurants and stuff a fair bit, but you know, I worked in a recruitment office when everything was going downhill in 2014. So when I finished there, I was like, I need to get back into cooking. You know, I started to find a bit of passion and love for it again. So I signed up for cooking school. It was to start in the May 2015. But I actually then ended up hitting my rock bottom with all my addictions, having been in rehab since February. But that was mainly for my mental health rather than the addiction side.
Because you went in cooking school in September, but there was, and then you go back to rehab in May of the following year, or?
I pretty much went back after I'd finished.
Okay.
So 3 months later.
Okay, cool.
It was just like it was a 3 month course.
So you're going to rehab again straight after the cooking school, and then what happened?
I needed to go back there. I knew didn't have anything kind of finished,
right,
in a sense. I knew still more skeletons in the closet. And that then carried on. I was there till February 2017.
And how did you come out with the idea of the blog?
So whilst I was at cooking school, I was very early in my addiction recovery and my mental health recovery from rehab. And I just realized as like the classes would go on, every morning we would cook, every afternoon there'd be a demonstration. So in the mornings when I was cooking, I never knew what mood I was going to wake up in, because I was still all over the place, really, you know, early recovery, about 3 months. And I just kind of realized that the food was helping me. Making bread was helping me when I woke up on those days when I woke up really angry. And there were days that I was really beating myself up, and I just needed to be a bit more loving and gentle. So, and it would just happen to be a day where I'm making meringues or something, where you can't bash the bowl or the air will leave and the meringue won't be nice and fluffy and crispy. And that kind of little thought started inspiring me. So I started with the Instagram page to help people, and, you know, other little kind of tidbits like chili, like helping boost endorphins and helping just get the positive endorphins and hormones going in your body. And so I started with that, and then I was like, right, well, maybe I should start a blog. So I got that up and going, and I just thought it'd be really useful for other people to firstly know my story, and then also kind of see which recipes really helped me with different things. So like I had one with my anger, and I put a bread recipe on there, told them a bit about my anger issues, and then how I do it is with bread, and there's the bread recipe. When I'm anxious, I make marshmallows, here's the marshmallow recipe. So it's kind of, I didn't know if it was going to help anyone.
It was more like every recipe was related to a state of mind and a state of how you were in that particular time, which I think is really interesting, because you have, like, obviously cooking is related to vitality and safety. And I think, you know, looking at your Instagram page and going through the recipes and whatever, is not all about the recipes, and it's all about the process. It's the process that is the healing part, which I think is amazing.
Exactly.
It's the fact that how you actually can feel so much better in the actual process by putting all your negative energy into the focus of something specific, like a specific recipe or whatever.
Exactly. And, you know, I know some people find cooking seriously stressful, but it worked for me. And it was my time to kind of meditate in a way, to focus on just this one thing that I was doing and relaxing and making something, turning that negative energy into something positive of making an awesome plate of food. And it really helped me. And I don't know whether it helped other people, but I mean, I was also, I then developed anorexia as well. So I was scared of food, but I'd still make it. And I still loved making it, but I was terrified to eat it, which was, I still can't get my head around, but that's just the...
Yeah, which is really interesting, isn't it? Because it's just like, normally it's the way around, isn't it? It's like you make food and you get so excited and you really get into the passion of the actual eating, as you said, but then you develop a sort of a fear.
Yeah, because I think the anorexia, I think, was definitely triggered from when I stopped drinking. I lost, in the first 2 weeks, I lost a stone of weight. And then I think in about 6 or 9 months, I'd lost 3 or 4 stone. And from going from being quite big to then being tiny, it was like, oh, I like this side of me. You know, I like how I look, even though I looked pretty horrible, to be honest. And then the fear of food comes back. So I'm like, oh no, everything I put in my mouth is going to make me fat again, which was total nonsense. But at least the cooking still kept me going, and it kept me sane, even though I was, you know, battling with this anorexia at the same time. It's not totally sane, but it at least kept some of the things that were going on in my head at bay, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it was a way to kind of get away a little bit from what were you thinking, right? It was more, it was an escape. That was what I wanted to say.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and, you know, if we go to your blog, as you said, you know, it's really interesting how you really document the whole process, and it's brilliant. And I find the whole story really inspiring. And, you know, I think this is my next question for you. And it's like, what would you say to people that are currently struggling with, you know, depression or self-harming or drinking or any addiction? What would you say is the key of recovery?
Speak, talk, shout, just get help. Ask and shout and do anything you need to get the help that you need. It, thank God the stigma is being stamped out now, because when I was really kind of, at least through my teens and early 20s, it was so hard to talk about. And there was so much shame around it. There's nothing to be ashamed of. It's
okay not to be okay.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, you know, you can't prepare for it, you know, in advance. It's going to happen to anyone. It can happen to anyone. It doesn't matter what your background is. If you get it, you get it. It's like anything, like cancer. You get it, you treat it. That's what you need to do with your mental health. If you know that you've got signs, if you can feel signs, if something doesn't feel right, go and get it treated as soon as possible. Ask for help, ask for support, ask, shout, plead, anything.
I agree. And also, also admit that there is an issue. It's a big thing. And I think this is the message I want to spread today. It's about communication is the key. And we live in a society, in a society and in a place where there are so many ways to communicate, and there are so many ways to really reach other people. You know, you can really reach somebody that is feeling as the same way as you do and try to support one another, which is brilliant. And my question is, how your relationship with your family changed, and how much this relationship with your family affected your recovery?
We've always been a really close family. I'm very, very lucky with that. But the struggles I went through have brought us so much closer. You know, we're traditionally a very stiff upper lip, traditional British family. You know, you just get up and get on with it. And I think when they finally realized that, okay, I can't just get up and get on with it, this is a bit more serious than that, they all bent over backwards to do anything they could to help me. Like when I went on to medication, my brother was out of work. He was doing research constantly into everything about the medication that I was taking. My parents were incredible. From being my dad being a, you know, stiff upper lip traditional gentleman who again, like I said, it's a stiff upper lip, get on with it, get back up and carry on. He realized that this wasn't the way forward when everything went downhill, and he ended up going to seminars and lectures and reading books and listening to interviews, watching videos, talking to friends who have been through similar stuff that I've been through, just to help him understand more. And it was, that meant so much to me, because, you know, from all this silence that I've had for so long, I never thought I was heard or understood or accepted, even though that's probably total rubbish. That's just what my head tells me. To see how willing he was to do all of this. And now, like, I can go to my parents for anything. And even just the most minor thing, I can just talk openly and freely with them. They don't judge me. And they just love me. And like, I had a panic attack, must have been last year or something, when I was with my parents. And my dad, who's, you know, he's very much business related and he works flipping hard. He, I think, was on a call and he hung up his call straight away and he just came over and he helped me breathe. He helped me calm down. And it was, you know, seeing this passion and dedication from my parents, it really made me respect them, like how much they, like how far they've come through my journey as well, not just me, and all my siblings as well. They've all been absolutely incredible. They will all do anything they can to help me and support me. It's amazing.
I love that. And it's also, you know, this is what I like about what you said. It's about, it's a family job. It's not about sending your son or your daughter somewhere to get, like, oh, you know, they're gonna help her and she's gonna come back and she's gonna be okay. No, it's a full-time job, and it's a family work. Everybody needs to make an effort to really help. And I think it's easier to sometimes, I talk about on my personal experience, I think it's easier to point out what is wrong instead of try to figure out what you can do. Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. No, totally.
No, I love the message, and I think it's so powerful. And, you know, we are in a place and time where there is so much more awareness about it, which is brilliant. And there is also work related, and everything when it comes to life and work balance is brilliant. And talking about that, you are, as I said before, you join us from Zimbabwe. So you changed your life like a year ago, isn't it?
It was last July. So I ended up having another bit of a breakdown last kind of May, June. Went back to my psychiatrist and was diagnosed bipolar. And so I decided to just shut up the kitchen for a while, get rid of my flat. And I just knew I needed to be back in nature with elephants, because I'm an elephant lady, and just to kind of reground myself, get away from social media, and because I was using it negatively, get away from London and buildings and stuff. I just knew I needed to be in nature and learn how to love myself again. And within a few weeks of being there, I decided I was going to move here. So I moved in February, and it's just the best. It is the best. It's hard. It's a hard life out here. It's totally different, you know. Third world almost doesn't even, you know, describe it. It's almost less than third world. But going back to basics and living very basically is what I need. And it's amazing. I love it.
It's a reconnection, isn't it? It's a reconnection to your soul, a reconnection to yourself.
And realizing what we take for granted in the first world. Like, oh, absolutely. I've got no electricity at the moment, and the sun's almost gone down, so I'm almost in the dark. But that's fine. That's fine. Doesn't matter. We've got candles.
Yeah, the electricity was an issue. We recorded this call several times.
Just a little bit. To be honest, everything is an issue here. Like, back home, you have super fast broadband. You have super fast Wi-Fi. We don't even have Wi-Fi. At least in our house, it's all done with phone data. And at the moment, the networks are up and down, round and round. So you can't do anything. You can't get hold of anyone. So we're really lucky this has managed to sort of work.
No, I have to say, I'm really, really excited because we managed to actually get the call. Clemmie messaged me. She's like, I don't know if I'm going to make it today because my connection is not working. I was like, okay, just let me know if you can. Otherwise, I'm going to find another way to get in touch with you. And then she goes, we managed. Yes, it's working. And I was like, yeah, you see, someone is listening to us.
Exactly. It's only taken a few attempts, but
it's fine. It's the result that we need to focus. It's not the amount of time. So it's good. Well, Clemmie, thank you so much for sharing your story. I feel, as you said, you want to inspire a lot of people. And I think your story and sharing this with us today is going to help a lot of people that are probably going through the same situation. And I really thank you so much for that. I really appreciate that you joined me today. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks again to Clemmie for sharing her interesting and powerful story. It was great to hear that she found a route to recovery through her interest in cooking. I'll be back next week with another episode. I hope you guys can join me then.
You've been listening to A Cup of Joe with Joseph Rubelli. Don't forget to subscribe. And for more information, check the website at www.josephrubelli.com. You can also follow on Instagram at Joseph Rubelli. Thanks for listening.